Nick.
I would die for you if I had to.
Handley.
I'm just kidding.
The Nick Handley Show. AM 590.
Got a busy final hour here on the Nick Handley Show. Appreciate you making us part of your afternoon and still trying to get used to looking out the window and it being dark. Hopefully nobody had any issues with the old clock setbacks there. But going to be talking to Sam McCune of the Omaha World Herald here in just a moment. Also, as we do the 5 o'clock hour on a Thursday, getting ready for another week of NFL football. Going to be talking some NFL. And one of my favorite guys covering the Chicago Bears, Jeff Dickerson. ESPN NFL Nation reporter, going to weigh in on the soap opera at Hallis Hall. If it's not a hash mark, a correct hash mark for your kicker, it's having the TVs on blaring criticism to Mitch Trubisky. My goodness, these are our Bears. And I know a Bears fan and Sam McCune as well. Sam, it has not been the season that we were hoping for the Chicago Bears, but hey, you know what? They might be getting a new quarterback next year, so there is always that kind of hope.
So what is this thing with Trubisky? I missed that.
So yesterday he was talking to the media and said that they asked how he was sort of handling any of the criticism, if he hears any of it. He said that, you know what, he tries to keep blinders on. He actually said earmuffs and tunnel vision. And he said if he had it his way, though, he'd like a lot of the TV monitors at Hallis Hall to be turned off because people are weighing in on him and his team that don't know what's really going on at Hallis Hall or within this organization. So people kind of made that a big deal and said, all right, well, they got to turn off all the TVs around Mitch because apparently he's sensitive to that. I think it's a lot to do about nothing. I think the fact that he's struggling, it just makes it a little bit more easier to probably pile on. But, it's fun to talk about, apparently.
Yeah, they're experiencing, you know, sort of a slump, a second-year slump, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So, that was not unexpected, but at the same time, it's pretty much as disappointing as Nebraska's football season.
Well, and it's funny, I make a lot of the comparisons for, and you probably fall in this boat too, the two teams you, I would assume, watch the most on a weekend would be in the NFL, the Bears, and, of course, for your job, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Yeah. And I think of an offensive-minded guy like Scott Frost, just like an offensive-minded guy like Matt Nagy. And I'm watching the play calling after the Darian Daniels interception, and you go with sort of that shovel pass. It honestly made me think, oh, my gosh, that's something that I think Matt Nagy would do, where you almost try to outsmart everybody when really the basic predictable thing might actually be the best remedy there, or at least in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely could. That's very fair. You know, it's a tough spot right now because with a play like that, you're going to have people who line up on one side and say, why would you do that? And then you're going to have, a football guy say, well, I mean, play might work if they've got luck. Mm-hmm. That's all true. That's true. But sometimes it does feel like this season is a test of loyalty. Like it's a test of fans' loyalty, the media's objectivity, all those things. Like you have to sort of be thoughtful about how you look at it and talk about it. I that's not a call that I think he'd probably make again, but whether or not he'd admit that, I don't know. I don't think they're that far off. I don't. I'm not saying that to be a Pollyanna. I think they're, but they're far enough off that they can't make mistakes in the numbers that they make them and win games. So they have to play a pretty clean football game, and I think a lot of times Nebraska is fall short of that. I'm not talking a spectacular game, just clean, mm-hmm. And they haven't been able to do that very often.
When you kind of see, I think it's more of seeing as opposed to hearing Scott Frost. When you guys see him during the week, see him after a game, what have you kind of taken away from Scott Frost in this season, just the way that he's kind of interacted with you guys?
That's been a hard season, and that there's not always a lot of easy answers.
Yeah.
he's bitten his tongue, I think, a little bit sometimes. I'm sure he's frustrated. But he says nobody cares more than he does. I think that's true. I think he feels an enormous amount of responsibility and pressure. He's referenced a couple of times. He's been watched the film again and again, and I think they're trying really hard to figure it out and all that stuff. It's just, he kind of said it right when he said that all three phases need to play well at the same time. That's called complementary football.
Yeah.
And, you know, they haven't had enough of that this year. I think that probably bothers him, that the offense can play well and the defense is falling apart, or the defense is playing really well and the offense can't cash in. And so when those things kind of combine, you have sort of you have a little bit of good, a little bit of bad. Like I said, they don't have a good enough team to be able to do good and bad. You know, it's got to be almost 95% good, and they're going to win games. It's just too hard otherwise. The games they've won this year are South Alabama and Illinois and Northern Illinois and Northwestern. And, you know, the two games in the Big Ten, they were nail-biters. And they were 42-38 and 13-10, and they basically won both games in the final minute. And then they've lost two like that, right? They lost to Purdue and they lost to Indiana the same way. That's flip of the coin. That's four games. They won two, they lost two, and then they lost the one at Colorado. So they're 2-3 in those kind of games. Well, that's not uncommon. You know, you'd love to be 4-1, but it's not uncommon to be 2-3 in coin flip games. You got to shift one or two of those games so that they're not coin flips, or you got to play cleaner football. You can't turn it over. You can't get to the 20 and then throw an interception. When you get inside the 5, you got to score touchdowns, all those things. And so it to me, it's not as complex or as bizarre as anything other than just a lack of execution. And I think Frost feels that. I think he feels like they're not that far away, but they're not making the little plays that make the difference. And they could easily be 6-3, but instead they're 4-5.
Sam McCune of the Omaha World Herald joining me. Sam, Adrian's performance on Saturday I felt was a little bit more erratic than what I've seen previously. And, yeah, some of that could be rust. Some of that can be the injury. The inaccuracy on some wide-open guys, because as much as I was just kind of questioning the play calling inside the 5-yard line, I thought Scott Frost and this offense did a good job of scheming to where they were getting guys open. And we've seen this throughout the year, but some really wild misses on that. What would that kind of lead you to take away from his performance on Saturday?
I think he probably did experience rust. You know, he hadn't played in a competitive football game since October 5th, and that's almost a month. It doesn't surprise me that he would be rusty. If this were the NFL, you'd just kind of shrug your shoulders and go, you know, he'll get better next week.
Mm-hmm.
But it's college football, so it's this high drama every weekend, and it's not easy to make mistakes. And I'm not trying to excuse the way that he played, but I'll say this, that he probably was a little rusty. The only way to knock off rust is to knock it off and actually play. And by the fourth quarter, he was making some really good plays. And I think what I would say, I was talking about this on our podcast today, is I think what I would say, Nick, is that Nebraska probably needs somewhere close to elite quarterback play, and they're not getting elite play. They're getting at times very good play. Sometimes they're getting good. Sometimes they're getting fair. But they're not, I wouldn't describe them right now as one of the best quarterback teams in college football. And with the roster where it is right now, and the depth issues that they have at certain positions and the imperfections they have on offense, they need... You know that play that Adrian made early in the game when he converted that fourth down, and it was a great play. And we don't even credit him with it really, because he makes it look so easy.
Yeah.
But it was a great play. It was a great play. And they scored a touchdown because he made that play. And not every quarterback would make that.
Mm-hmm.
But they need about 4 or 5 of those plays a game. and they need 4 or 5 of those a game, and then they need 0 mistakes. And right now, you know, Adrian is a guy that can give you the great play, but he also gives you 2 or 3 that are not very good at all. And you got to decide, okay, can he up the number of great plays, or can we find a way to reduce two plays that are really bad. And I think that's kind of where it's at. Now, you put in Luke McCaffrey or Noah Vedran, and I'm not saying – I think you're going to get fewer mistakes. I don't know that you're going to get the play that Adrian Martinez made on fourth down. I just don't. And I think Martinez deserves credit for making that play. It directly led to a touchdown. They don't score a touchdown. They don't score points at all if he doesn't make that play. And he deserves credit for it. And I'm not sure his backups would have made that play. So they might have. They might not have. And as a result, you know, I think what Adrian has to do is cut down on the mistakes. Keep the great plays, which he can still make, and cut down on the bad ones. And I think you've got a better quarterbacking formula. Problem is, they're playing Wisconsin and Iowa in two of the three last games.
Yeah.
And neither one of those teams is Purdue. Honestly, I think Indiana could probably hang with both teams. But neither one of them is as bad as Purdue. So Nebraska's going to have to play really, really good football to win either game. I mean, they're going to have to play their best games this season.
Sam, lastly, if we are to look at what I think is the most likely scenario for Nebraska's last three games, and that is 1-2, and I think a lot of people could see 0-3, but 1-2, you go into the offseason with a 5-7 record. It is a one game improvement from a year ago. I know a lot of people have talked about so much preseason hype in the 2019 team from the national media, local media, from what we were hearing from the coaching staff, and it was easy to really get on board. This is going to sound crazy, but if you go from 4-8 to 5-7, can that actually be a good thing in the offseason where people will not really buy into, hey, I got him at 9 or 10 wins next season? I mean, could that actually really temper the expectations where people will now be squarely in that, I got to see this before I can make any kind of guess or forecast for the season?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think that we've already been tempered on that front. You know, unless they win their last three.
Right.
You see the full flowering of their potential.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If they won their last three, then it'd be like, all right, you know, this. Maybe they won last, you know, maybe it was better. But I think you can probably get the tempering at 6-6 that you'd get at 5-7.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expected 6-6 this season. I think they could really use the bowl practices to work on their young players and maybe bond a little. And I think a bowl would be a nice reward for the outgoing seniors. Maybe it'd give them a chance to sort of relax a little and because I think things have been pretty tense. So I think that would help. That said, you know, a 5-7, which would be very disappointing. I think everybody'd be really disappointed if that were the case. 5-7 might get you, a lot of hunger among those young players. I just wouldn't discount the possibility of Nebraska winning two down the stretch. I know that seems very unlikely. It seems almost comical to say it, but they're just not that far off. They do have to play really well, and it doesn't mean that they will. And they, you know, Wisconsin could run them out of the stadium. Mm-hmm. They could beat them by 21 or 28. But on the right day, with the right game plan, and the right execution, they can beat Wisconsin. I know that sounds crazy, but they can. Wisconsin is a team that if you're going to beat them, you know how to beat them. You got to take the ball. You got to limit their offensive touches, and you have to drive the ball on their defense and get their defense tired. If you can do those things, you have a chance. And I'm not saying that Wisconsin's not a great team, because they are. Iowa's the same way. Iowa had a great team last year. They finished 9-4. They were a heck of a team. They had a bunch of first-round draft picks. They had two last year. They're going to probably have two more this year. And Nebraska still almost beat them at the wire. You know, they only lost 31-28. It was a great game. So there is a chance. And Nebraska has to kind of put the past behind them. And I think Frost did a good job of this yesterday of saying we're gonna keep the big picture thing for the off season, and we're just gonna focus on getting better.
Yeah.
And I think if they focus on that, and you know, if you take the helmet decals and the uniforms off of Wisconsin and Iowa, and you just look at what they are, and and you focus on who they are in teams, the players, and not the names on the side of the, you know, the names on the jersey, I think Nebraska has a chance in the game. I'm not saying they'd be favored. I'm not saying they'll win, but they can beat those teams. And they just have to play their best football, and they also have to have a good game plan.
Sam McCune with the Omaha World Herald joining us. Sam, appreciate it. Enjoy your bye week. We'll look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thank you.
Sam is, I will give you this. It's easy to get emotional as a fan when Nebraska struggles, or even when they have a win where maybe they didn't look great, but all of a sudden there's something at the very end that just gets you overly excited. And there's always, you know, someone's always going to tell you, you're never as bad as you appear, and you're never as good as you appear. You're somewhere in the middle. I will give Sam so much credit. He has always been very even keel on this thing, where he hasn't been overly critical on what he has seen, and he's never been, I think, overly optimistic or even giving too much credit to Nebraska. He's maintained, and I will give him credit, because if Nebraska is indeed, what Sam said, that close, and say they were to get a game that nobody expected them to get, I would give Sam a lot of credit for that, because I personally don't think they're that close. It's hard for me to see that, but Sam sees it a lot closer than I do. So, and he's always kind of maintained that they're not that far away, and I think that that's not a bad place to be, where if you're looking forward to next Saturday and you're hoping that something can come out of it, I mean, I think a lot of things he says is right. We know it's a mismatch on paper. We know that Nebraska physically, you're very concerned about how they kind of stack up. But what I would say, where Sam is absolutely right, Wisconsin's not Ohio State. Okay, we saw how that matchup went and how really different those two teams are. Wisconsin does what they do very well. They're not very exotic in how they do things, and they don't overwhelm you with talent, but they have an identity. It's a very physical style, and it's something that concerns you when you've seen Nebraska try to match up with that. But as far as overall versatile play, yeah, it's, I mean, they're not Ohio State, but it's still, I mean, we all know this is going to be an extremely tough road for Nebraska to hoe. And we'll see how it goes. Again, the Twitter poll is up. We'll check in with that here coming up. Also, we got some audio. We're kind of talking about the whole Mitch Trubisky thing. We'll hear what he had to say. Also, Rich Eisen thinks he knows what the issue is with the Chicago Bears. We'll be talking more NFL, including more on the Chicago Bears, with Jeff Dickerson of NFL Nation reporting on the Bears for ESPN. That's just around the corner.
Nick Handley, AM 590 ESPN Omaha. This is the Nick Handley Show.
Go to Twitter at Nick ESPN 590. Chad tweeted at me earlier, said, "Dude, I waited for high school football playoff talk, and you only get to Class A, WTH. And I said, all right, to be continued, we'll have a full Pierce breakdown, because this is the Pierce Fighting Blue Jay fan. And he said he's still waiting for that breakdown. All right, so not to delay it anymore, the Pierce Fighting Blue Jays will be taking on Ord, who upset Gothenburg. Dude, Class C won, TJ. I mean, if you were still hosting the little high school show that we had last couple of years, and you did a fine job, your mind would just be blown after all of the C1 upsets. It was straight chalk in Class B. There were a few minor ones in Class A, nothing crazy. But, you know, we always see in the NCAA tournament, the 12 over 5. Oh, we got ourselves a 12 over 5 where Ord took down Gothenburg. And now that sends Pierce on the road. They got to go play at Ord tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Pierce, who won 55-28 over Chase County. So I will say this. Anytime the higher seed has to go on the road and play one of the lower seed teams, they're all excited. They, you know, the whole house money thing. Look out. But you know what? If I got my money on high school football, which I should never do, I got Pierce all the way. And if Pierce makes the state championship game in Class C1, I will be there in Lincoln. How about that?
I'll give you $5 if you can name me one Pierce Fighting Blue Jay.
Well, I don't know any of the players. I have no idea. See, I'm relying on our good folks from Twitter, including Chad, who is a big Pierce backer.
That's fair.
Yeah. But again, good luck to all of the teams still live in the high school state playoffs that resume tomorrow night. All right, so Sam was asking about, okay, what's his deal? What's the thing with Mitch Trubisky? This was Mitch Trubisky yesterday talking to the media. And I want to ask you this after we play this. Do you think this is a big deal or not? Go ahead.
Trying to get some of these TVs in the building turned off because you got too many people talking on TV about us and what they think about us, what we should do, what we are and what we're not. But they don't really know who we are or what we're capable of, people, or what we're going through, what we're thinking. It's just the outside viewers looking in. And so, yeah, tunnel vision, earmuffs, and just come to work every day and try to get better and get back to what we know we're capable of doing.
So if you have listened to a lot of the ESPN programming, this has been like round-the-clock coverage on just that soundbite alone. I'm sorry. I don't understand what the big deal is. Like, oh, who the heck was it? Damian Woody this morning just went off on Mitch Trubisky about how he would never want to play with somebody that soft. Okay, I would ask you this. Say Mitch had a bad game, but for the most part this year has been okay. Hasn't been great, but it's been good. Would you still feel like this is such a big deal? Like, this should not be a headline. Like, someone asked him how you deal with the outside noise, and that was his response. Like, the fact that, oh, well, this gives us an inside look of how soft the kid is. Like, I'm sorry, I don't understand why this is such a big deal. I mean, the kid sucks. He's not good. He's just not good. But this little soundbite, when you look at the list of things that Mitch Trubisky has been unable to accomplish or things that concern you about his game, couldn't we sort of sweep this way down the list? I don't know. Do you hear that, and are you like, oh, man, that was bad?
No, but Damian Woody's on a talk show that needs ratings and needs juicy things to be talked about, and he's going to go, yeah, okay, the Bears are losing. Mitchell Trubisky hasn't been that guy. The easy angle is to say, yeah, this guy's soft. No way he can actually cut it. So I guess I'm not too surprised, but yeah, I don't think it's that huge of a deal at all.
Like, what if Russell Wilson says something like that? Like, people be like, oh, man, yeah, good for him.
I don't know if it would, because he's so well-trained to just do coach speak.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, but his answers are, like, not authentic.
A lot of people were digging into that thing. I don't know. All right, so we updated you on Antonio Brown. He now wants to play football, so that's a thing. Are you excited about that? Do you want to see him play for your Minnesota Vikings?
No, not really. Yeah.
Tomorrow,
they got good enough wide receivers anyway, so I don't need them.
He'll change his mind tomorrow. XFL, they need to keep an eye on this situation.
Yeah, there you go. Now, there's a league that would happily take him.
XFL needs to keep their eye on the situation. All right, we are going to continue to take a look at Week 10, including a conversation with ESPN NFL Nation reporter Jeff Dickerson covering the Chicago Bears. Get his thoughts on the happenings of Hallis Hall. JD joins us next. All right, we are getting back to the NFL conversation here, including a Thursday night football game that all of a sudden is kind of interesting. Oakland and the LA Chargers. We'll talk about that. Also, Antonio Brown, he's in, he's out. He's now saying again today that he does not ever want to play in the NFL. So just kind of stick with that one as much as we can. But all week long, we've been talking about the state of affairs in Nebraska. Football has been less than stellar, and then the Fred Hoiberg era got off to a very rocky start this week. So just not a lot of good things, but just I want people to put themselves in my shoe. Not only has it not been good for Nebraska, but as a big Chicago Bears fan and a big Chicago Blackhawk fan and a Bulls fan as well, things are not good there, especially with the Blackhawks and the Chicago Bears, as you would know. And we are going to talk about my beloved Chicago Bears with the very best in the business. That is Jeff Dickerson. He reports about the Chicago Bears for the NFL Nation ESPN. Also, you can hear him on ESPN Radio. JD, the last time we talked to you, there was so much excitement. We're kicking off the 100th season of the NFL, Bears, Packers, and this was going to be a drive for a championship for Chicago. Now, as we get into this game against Detroit, boy, things have changed in a lot of words that seem to amplify the struggles of this organization in the last week. So I just Are you keeping up with the soap opera pretty good?
I am. Nick, I am doing my very best. It's like every day there's another fire that the Bears have to put out. And typically speaking, it's a self-created controversy. I mean, there was really no reason for Mitchell Trubisky to, even if he was joking, say he wants the TVs turned off inside Halas Hall, to not watch the talk show host bash the team. It's like every day there's something here. But you're right. I mean, the feeling now in Chicago in early November compared to the feeling in early September, it's like night and day. I mean, there was so much confidence that coming off a 12-win season, a playoff berth, that the Bears were going to pick up right where they left off. And it has been far from that. So they got off to that 3-1 start. But you could tell right away the offense just wasn't right. And everything they've tried so far to fix it has not worked. And you can tell that all these offensive struggles have begun to take a toll on the defense because those guys are playing so many snaps per game that they're just wearing down. And when you're on the field for 84 plays, like the Bears were against the Eagles on Sunday, there's a higher likelihood that bad things are going to happen. So, I mean, from every phase, everything is just trickling down. And the bottom line is they've lost 4 in a row. They're 3-5. It feels like, Nick, they're 3-13.
Yeah.
That's how it feels around here.
We always hear from people, you learn so much about somebody through adversity, whether it's our personal life or professional life, and you cover this team more than anybody. What have you learned from Matt Nagy in these struggles?
Well, I remain convinced that Matt Nagy is the guy for the job. I think he is doing everything he can to keep this team together, to keep this locker room together. But at the end of the day, I just don't think he has the quarterback that can run the system the way he needs this system run. You know, the Bears don't want to obviously give away everything that's happening behind the scenes. And Nagy is very gracious with his press conferences and his time. He tries to give you the best possible answers. But so many times this year, we've asked him questions like, Matt, you know, why is the center not blocking a guy that's coming in free? And he just like, well, I really can't tell you. Because it's obvious. Because the protection schemes aren't getting called out by the quarterback at the line of scrimmage. He's not feeling the pressure. He's not hitting open throws. There's just nothing that they're doing well when he's in the game at quarterback, save for a couple occasional, you know, decent plays and a big throw to Taylor Gabriel in that last game. But those just aren't there enough to justify what's going on at that position. So I think Nagy knows this. He would never rip Trubisky publicly, would never rip the team publicly. But, like, I think he's just trying to hang on here and ride this out and hope that maybe it gets better with Trubisky. But, Nick, I mean, we've seen this for enough now. I mean, I'm sorry. 3 years is a big enough body of work. Look, he's just not the guy. And eventually the rest of the organization will come to that realization. But until they do, Matt Nagy is just left trying to put this puzzle together every week. But I think he's fighting a losing battle that's just doomed to fail.
Well, and Jeff, the thing I find interesting about this is you go back 5 years ago, Bears fans, myself included, you'd see the struggles of Jay Cutler. You'd see the trying to fit the ball into a tight window, the interceptions, and then just kind of the overall demeanor of I don't give a you-know-what. At the very least, we know that's the exact opposite with Mitch Trubisky. This kid, it seems like he's so committed, he works so hard, and it almost seems like he works so hard to a fault where I just feel like he is overly tight that we may never see what kind of a quarterback he could have eventually been.
Yeah, he's in his head. You can tell the confidence just isn't there. And, you know, maybe it goes back to, Nick, the fact that they should have sat him that first year, but they couldn't do it because they signed Mike Glennon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to give you the scariest thing you're going to hear all day, okay? I actually think that Mitchell Trubisky is playing worse than Mike Glennon played with the Bears in those four starts in 2017. And I never in a billion years thought I would say that, but look, it's not just one guy. I mean, the offensive line has had their issues this year. They're getting nothing from Trey Burton at tight end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Anthony Miller has been disappointing in his second season. Tariq Cohen's numbers have fallen off a cliff. It's not just the quarterback, but you can't watch the Bears on offense and say that their quarterback is giving them a chance to win. In fact, he's doing the exact opposite, and he's making mistakes that are helping them lose games.
Talking Chicago Bears, Jeff Dickerson, ESPN NFL Nation, covering the Chicago Bears, also on ESPN Radio. I want to get your thoughts on some of the theories. I wouldn't even say rumors, but theories out there about this team going forward. The one that has picked up a lot of traction, we'll get to quarterback here in a moment, but the one that has picked up some traction, at least food for thought, is if you could get a first-round draft pick or two off of Khalil Mack, are the Bears in a position where they should possibly consider that? What do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I think that is completely setting everything back 5 more years. I mean, Khalil Mack is a game changer. He hasn't been perfect this year, and they're certainly missing Akeem Hicks in the middle of that defense. But, I mean, you can't go down that road and get rid of one of the greatest pass rushers of this generation. They got to figure out quarterback, and yes, right now there are no first-round picks. They've got 2 twos, though, so maybe you get creative and you try to package those together to get back in round one. I'm not saying they can. I'm not saying they want to. I see what you're saying. I mean, you're not going to be able to draft. You're not going to get in that top five and get the quarterback you want via the draft. There are other avenues they're going to have to explore. I think there's going to have to be a veteran brought in next year to start. And then they start the clock again on finding that young quarterback if they're given that opportunity to do that, as this front office is currently constructed. But I just don't think moving Khalil Mack solves any of the problems for this team long term.
Okay, now with that, the quarterback, we hear Cam Newton on IR. The Carolina Panthers could save somewhere in the ballpark of $19 million off the salary cap if they cut him going into the 2020 season. Whether it's Cam Newton or even some kind of interesting veteran, as you just pointed out, I still am curious about if Alex Smith comes back. If he is healthy at some point, would he be an option? Where do you see the likelihood of either a Cam Newton or somebody who is familiar with the Nagy system that could even come in that's not as big of a splash as Cam Newton?
I think it would have to be someone that understands this system. I'm not really excited about the Cam Newton possibility. He seems like he might honestly be done. You know, he had the weird video where he's drinking wine in the dark and everything. I don't know. I'm probably not going down that road if I'm the Bears. I just don't think he's that type of personality they need here. You know, the Alex Smith thing to me, Nick, is by far the most intriguing. But I don't know what his leg looks like. I know what it looks like. I saw the Halloween picture he put on Instagram. It doesn't look very good. It looks very swollen. But in a perfect world, if Alex Smith is healthy and he's cleared to play and the Redskins release him and he's good to go, that's where I'm going. I mean, I wouldn't even think twice. I don't think Matt Nagy would think twice. I think that's the direction that they go. But it's so unclear whether or not he's going to be able to play. Then you go down the list. I mean, Mark Helfrich, who coached Marcus Mariota in college, is the Bears offensive coordinator in title. Is that something they think about? I mean, there will be some options. There'll be some names out there. But with Cam Newton, I don't know, because, you know, look, maybe at some point, Nick, Cam Newton feels like Andrew Luck did. Hey, I'm just tired of being injured. I'm tired of not feeling good. I've got so much money. I can do whatever I want. I can travel. I can hopefully fly in first class. I can do whatever I want to do. And why am I putting myself through this anymore? So I would have reservations about that. But if the Alex Smith thing, if it's a miracle and there's the medical clearance and he's back to close to normal, I think that's something the Bears would be foolish not to at least strongly explore.
And I suppose all this is a moot point because we know Tom Brady is coming to Chicago for a year, right?
Well, totally. I mean, I left off Brady because I'm just trying to,
that's
trying
a given,
to protect the great secret here at Hallis Hall that everyone knows, but no one knows on the outside. That would be amazing. I mean, again, like, people say that, and I'm like, why? I love Chicago. I've lived here my whole life. I wouldn't live anywhere else except for maybe Southern California, but whatever. But especially when it's like 25 degrees
right
here in Chicago. But I don't know why would someone who has won 6 championships and wins every year come to a franchise that can't win back-to-back years? I just find that funny. But hey, at least until he commits to New England beyond this season, I guess anything is possible, right?
JD, lastly, what does this say this season? And when you start kind of adding up the draft picks and the moves that Ryan Pace has made, what do you think this kind of says about him overall as a GM for the Chicago Bears? And do you think at some point between the end of December and getting close to free agency that either he or Matt Nagy sort of hints that, yeah, they took a swing and a miss in 2017?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Nagy needs to even answer that question.
Right.
He wasn't here, and you know what? He's gone on record saying that his pre-draft visit with Trubisky in Kansas City wasn't a great one. And so they got the right guy in Kansas City. So Matt Nagy has nothing to apologize for. Now, Ryan Pace, you know, I think he'll obviously, the next time he talks to us, which will be in January if they don't make the playoffs, which is not looking very likely, I think he'll have to address this. And I don't know if he's going to have any sort of apology, but it doesn't look good. And, you know, if you look at the entire roster right now, there aren't a whole lot of draft picks that are having good years. I mean, they just started getting David Montgomery involved.
Yeah.
I think he can be a pretty good player, but, you know, Leonard Floyd doesn't do much. You know, James Daniels is really struggling at center. Last year, second-round pick. We talked about Anthony Miller. Tariq Cohen's numbers are not great. Where's Eddie Jackson? You know, he's not making turnovers like last year. Roquan Smith has had not a great second season overall. So there's not a lot of positives going on here with the draft classes. And the quarterback thing is, Nick, that's hard because, you know, Ryan Pace made two moves at quarterback, Mike Glennon and Mitchell Trubisky. Wow, that's not good.
Is Jeff Dickerson covering the Chicago Bears NFL Nation for ESPN. You can also hear him on the airwaves, ESPN Radio. JD, really appreciate you checking in with us, man. Be good out there. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, man. Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
One of the very best, and it is. It's funny. I've been telling people since like week 4 or 5 when Chicago started struggling, and a lot of the things that were going on, like if you are a Nebraska fan and a Chicago Bear fan, boy, it's not easy. It's just not easy because not only do you have two struggling football teams, but you also have a lot of the same issues going on. And I'm with JD. I think Matt Nagy is, at least on this very day, the right man for the job. He was not part of the Mitchell Trubisky draft. He was handcuffed to him when he took the job. But I also am confused on the offensive identity that they're trying to establish. And maybe they just can't because of the quarterback. But the bigger issue now is with the general manager, Ryan Pace, because there have been some good moves. I think the Khalil Mack deal, even though they have lost a lot of draft capital because of it, has given him a little bit of a pass on some of the more trouble that they've had in the draft and even in some of the free agencies. Like Pernell McPhee was not good. They paid him. He was injured in Baltimore, and he was okay at times, but he was injured most of the time, and they paid him over $40 million. So, and that's one example. And he brought up another guy, and for a lot of Iowa fans, you might be able to relate to this. He mentioned James Daniels. I'm shocked right now that he has not had a bigger impact. I was so excited when the Bears got Daniels, because we know, first of all, the offensive linemen that Iowa churns out, but also guys at the position either between tackle and center, and they've used him at center a lot. I know he's sort of that versatile offensive lineman, but he has been really, really shaky this year. So there's a lot of things going on there. I don't know if Ryan Pace's job is in jeopardy, but at some point, he's going to have to answer for the big mistake they made in 2017, which seems to be keeping a team that otherwise appears to be close to that not only regular playoff contender, but possibly a championship contention because of what happened last year. But the quarterback position has set that part of it back, and we'll see what they do to try to correct it. They got the Lions this weekend in Chicago. We'll tell you more about some of the games coming up this week, including tonight's Thursday night football game. And Antonio Brown, he said he will never play. He said that a few weeks, well, maybe about a month ago. Then he said he would like to play. Today he's saying he'll never play. Do you believe him? Is there any value to him? I don't know. We'll get into that next. Don't forget to log on to the MVP Club page at AM590ESPNRadio.com. Your chance to win $4,000 cash for Thanksgiving. Throw a huge celebration. Score the best Black Friday deals or get a head start on holiday gifts. Brought to you by Westfield Plastic Surgery Center, bringing out the best possible version of you. Big thanks to our guests today, including Stu Pospisil, the Omaha World Herald, Mike Gavinet, head coach for UNO Hockey, voice of the Huskers, Greg Sharp, Omaha World Herald, Sam McEwen, and ESPN NFL Nation reporter, Jeff Dickerson. If you missed any of those interviews or the show, check out the podcast, AM590ESPNRadio.com. What's on Tap is brought to you by Cunningham's Pub and Grill, 108th and Old Mill, for some of the best smoked wings and just great menu items all across the board. 33 beers on tap, including your local favorites. Great place to watch college football and get a dollar off your local pints. And also on Sunday, happy hour all day while you enjoy NFL action. It's Cunningham's Pub and Grill, 108th and Old Mill. NFL tonight, it's Oakland and the Chargers. TJ, if you would have asked me my interest level in this game 2 weeks ago, I would have said meh. Now, with the AFC, there's not a lot of movement going on there. I'm intrigued. I think the Raiders are on the verge of being a pretty good story this year.
Yeah, come on. John Gruden, yeah. Hard Knocks days, how can you forget those? He's a great guy.
Chargers have all of a sudden won two in a row, and most importantly, a big win over the Green Bay Packers. It's one thing to beat the Chicago Bears after they miss a field goal. But they took it to the Packers. So, yeah, Raiders and the Chargers tonight.
Did you order that cold red, man?
720 Fox and the NFL Network. We got some NBA tonight as well?
We do. Doubleheader, TNT, Boston, Charlotte, 7 o'clock. The only time Charlotte's maybe going to be on national television, the return of Kemba Walker to Charlotte.
Nice.
And then TNT, Portland at the LA Clippers. And I saw that one's at 9:30. The NBA did fine. The Clippers, $50,000 for not playing Kawhi Leonard now all of a sudden. So kind of going back on that statement.
Yeah,
yesterday.
They said they were, I thought they had said they were
cool with it. Yeah, apparently not.
They're compliant with it, but who knows. Sports Nightly coming up next right here on AM 590. We're back with you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. For TJ, I'm Nick. You've been listening to the Nick Hanley Show here on AM 590. Appreciate that. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on AM 590 ESPN Omaha. Good night, everyone.